And we now listen to Frédéric Keck. We'll talk about sampled sentinels anticipating emerging diseases as the human-animal interface. But I think that there's a change in fact.
Yes, I changed my topic because I wanted to talk about a project involving a collaboration with European biologists. But when I sent the argument in January, I thought this project would have some things to say, and it's still in the making, so I prefer to talk about ethnographic data on my work with Hong Kong biologists. So the title is Counting Viruses, Observing Birds, but it's still about constituting biobanks, having samples from humans and from animals. So this paper is an attempt to elaborate on the concept of sentinel as describing the specific situation of Hong Kong in the world of biosecurity. Stephen Collier and Andrew Lakoff have identified three techniques of preparedness that are used to imagine a future catastrophe whose probability is unknown, such as a pandemic originating in the animal reservoir, thought on the model of a bioterrorist attack. So this is the book Biosecurity Intervention in 2008. And with Andy Lakoff, we pushed the idea of sentinel devices in an issue of the journal LIM, recently covering all kinds of environmental threats and using animals as indicators of environmental threats that are not visible. So sentinel devices can be thought of as early warning systems at the animal levels. Then there is simulations based on worst case scenarios and a stockpiling of mass and antivirals. Being more an anthropologist of human-animal relationships, I've been interested by the concept of sentinel as linking health and security, so that's the idea of biosecurity, and also as positioning birds on the first line in the anticipation of flu pandemics, so considering birds as military soldiers in some way. The concept of sentinels allows to describe not only the relation of Hong Kong people to birds as they carry mutations of viruses originating from South China, but also the position of the Hong Kong territory as a hub where viruses are transmitted from South China to the rest of the world. After SARS in 2003, that also originated from South China, from bats, Hong Kong microbiologists declared the study on the ecology of influenza led in Hong Kong in the 1970s, in which Hong Kong acted as a sentinel post for influenza, indicated that it was possible for the first time to do preparedness for flu at the avian level. So my interest was to think about this quotation as at the many scales where there are relations between humans and non-humans that can be described as sentinel, be they at the political level or at the biological level or at the farm level in relation to poultry. In this paper, I try to extend the concept of sentinel from biosecurity practices to concerns in biodiversity, looking at actors who are interested in birds not only as virus carriers, but also as threatened by species extinction. How does the definition of Hong Kong as a sentinel post allow to compare different groups who produce knowledge about birds in the imagination of a coming catastrophe? So I take sentinel as a catching word to compare different relations to animals in this anticipation of the catastrophe. This question allows me to draw a link between the sentinel devices and stockpiling as two techniques of preparedness. I suggest to extend stockpiling from drugs and masks to data, samples, sequences, species numbers. How do virologists and bird watchers stockpile data when they observe birds? I propose to look at the relation of virologists and bird watchers to hunters, and this goes back to a discussion we had yesterday evening. Anthropologists such as Alain Testa, who passed away recently, or Roberta Maillon, have showed that hunting societies have virtual techniques to stockpile the material and anticipate their encounter with animals. So considering virologists and bird watchers in Hong Kong as virtual hunters, I want to introduce simulation as a component of the relation to nature and not only as exercises based on scenarios. And I've looked at these exercises in other works something that Guillaume Lachenal has organized last year. So this is also a reflection on sentinels as defining specific sites for biological research, such as Hong Kong, and this also resonates with the panel we had on Tuesday on Lycée et la Trace. So why is there this density of sentinel sites, and how can we unpack this density? And so I use preparedness as a way to combine different techniques in relation to animals. So first I describe the work of virologists. The Hong Kong University Department of Microbiology is divided into two parts, referred to as the wet lab and the dry lab. In the wet lab, virologists manipulate frozen pathogens in high conditions of biosecurity. Flu viruses are introduced in chicken embryos or ferrets or monkey cells to follow their replication, particularly the entrance initiated by the hemagglutinin and their release favored by the neuraminidase, hence the H and N letters given to flu viruses. H5N1 being the most famous because it emerged in Hong Kong in 1997, starting the fear of a coming pandemic, but recently there was the emergence of the H7N9 virus in Shanghai. It is possible to count the number of cells after the introduction of viruses by flow cytometry, or to see a cell undergoing apoptosis under electronic microscopy. In the dry lab, by contrast, virologists look at genetic sequences on their computers. Rather than searching for the impact on human health, they trace their mutations in the animal reservoir. Diseases are reduced to errors in coding, mismatches in replication and communication as part of a molecularization of life. Epidemic outbreaks are visualized as continuous shifts and catastrophic drift. Since viruses are pieces of information that need a cell to replicate, they can be treated adequately in these two perspectives, either in a cycle of life and death or through lines of mutation. Sequences of viruses, as well as all kinds of living beings, are available on GenBank, a website constituted by the National Center for Biotechnology Information. This databank contains more than 100 million sequences and doubles every 10 months. So the dry lab allows to bypass biosecurity constraints of the wet lab. It is not necessary to collect samples in farms or market, or to ask other labs to send samples, since they are available as computer sequences. So the shift from the wet lab to the dry lab is described as a change of status because you have access to a high standard publication, but it is also a kind of initiatory passage from dirty to clean, and you can read the quotation. And so it's a displacement from the collection of real viruses to a virtual space where they produce knowledge about future pandemics. A specific technique has been formed to give a biological meaning to computer sequences, which is bioinformatic alignment. Software such as BLAST or MSA are used to propose correlations between viral sequences based on probabilities of mutations. And they must be confirmed by virologists based on biological knowledge. So, for example, when two sequences are close to each other, it can be through mutations, ATCG becomes ATCA, or deletions, ATACAG becomes ATCG. But it may also be errors in sequencing. So the virologist needs to decide which correlations to take into account and which to consider as irrelevant, and they have some software to also do that. So you also can read the quotation. And for that, there are some discussions between labs. So it's not only work on computers, but it's also a discussion between labs on the conditions in which the viruses have been sequenced. So there is a relation to the biological knowledge in this discussion. And some labs are considered as less trustful for the production of good sequences. So the goal of bioinformatics is to produce a meaningful image that captures the newness of a virus in the accumulated knowledge, what is called a phylogenetic tree. This is a synthetic framework aligning sequences based on their distances in space, time, and species. It relies on the Darwinian hypothesis that similitude in mutations correspond to biological kinship. So the idea is that when a virus jumps from one species to another, it inaugurates a new set of lines by overcoming an evolutionary bottleneck that allows this mutation to replicate. And the virologists draw back these lines to the most recent common ancestor, which would be the origin of a pandemic in the crossing species. So there is a bet that the phylogenetic tree expresses a real process based on the representation of nature as trying all mutations to multiply in an optimal way. So this allows to move from relations to an absolute event. We try to get close to the real tree, that which explains genetic sequences, what we call the absolute evolutionary tree. So it's not only a method of probabilistic mutations, but they're looking for a biological event which would be below the actual outbreaks of new epidemics. This method has an important consequences. Genetic sequences allow to find emerging viruses that were not detected by surveillance, but that may have caused known outbreaks. The molecular clock displaces the time of emergence from the symptomatic present to a genetic past. Researchers at the University of Hong Kong have showed that the SARS viruses mutated in bats in South China before being transmitted by civet cats in Guangzhou in 2003. That the H5N1 virus had taken advantage of the poultry vaccination campaign that was organized in Vietnam and China in 2005, that the H1N1 virus emerging in Mexican swine in 2009 had a twin virus found on Hong Kong ports, and that the H1N1 virus causing the 1918 pandemic was already circulating in pork in 9/11. So they always date back the pandemic to a preceding event that only has meaning at the virtual level. And their conclusion in these articles have a strong policy impact. A better surveillance of animals could have led to an earlier detection of emerging viruses. So what is a better animal surveillance? It means a better use of the knowledge on animal viruses. Hong Kong microbiologists explained that their phylogenetic trees have a better value than others made with the same databank because they take the 8 segments of the flu virus genome and not only the H and N genes. So they explain that they make trees that are bigger than their colleagues. And they oppose other biologists who conceal the data, such as the Chinese virologist. The University of Hong Kong is linked to the University of Shantou in Fujian, where Hong Kong microbiologists regularly go to collect samples in poultry farms and markets. And when their publications threaten the interest of the Department of Agriculture in Beijing, for example, showing the circulation of H5N1 in poultry, their access to Shantou is cut. And so they have to stay in Hong Kong to work on the samples that they have already collected. And so their frustration at not having access to real samples is compensated by the quantity of information they have available on the data bank. So going to China and bringing back wild viruses is the gesture of the virus hunter, but the data bank they have collected in Hong Kong allow them to simulate this gesture at a virtual level. While infectious disease know no border, national states can put limits to the work of microbiologists, but these borders can be virtually crossed through the use of bioinformatics. And this is the quote of one of the biologists I've worked with: "We are destroying China's Great Wall. Every virus sequence is a brick that comes out." So this laboratory actually builds up the position of the sentinel, where the border, both the border between species and the border between territories, is equipped so as to produce meaningful signals in the anticipation of pandemic. So I'm interested in how this can be applied to those who deal not with domestic poultry but with wild poultry, and that's the bird watchers. The Hong Kong Birdwatching Society was founded in 1957 by British officers who wanted to raise the list of bird species on the territory so as to engage for their conservation. It is estimated that 400 bird species can be observed in Hong Kong due to its position on the migratory flyways between North and South of East Asia. Following a tradition of Western naturalists in China, it developed a distinctive mode when Hong Kong was discovered by China in 1997. The number of Chinese members increased to 1,000, and there was an raising involvement in teaching nature conservation and also in fighting a development project. And this led the Hong Kong Birdwatching Society to engage on the Mai Po Bird Reserve that was considered as a site for monitoring the health of wild birds. This reserve was run by the World Wildlife Fund, but owned by the Hong Kong government. So when the first cases of H5N1 appeared, the government closed the Mai Po Reserve, thus preventing the bird watchers to have access to their space of leisure. So the bird watchers had to mobilize to produce knowledge about the cases of H5N1 on their territory. And they showed that many wild birds with H5N1 were found not in the Mai Po Reserve, but around the bird market of Mong Kok, which they explained by the release of birds for spiritual purpose. Birds stuck in cages were released in parks close to the market, and the stress conditions in which they had been carried made them susceptible to infectious disease. So I became very interested in this controversy between bird watchers and Buddhist monks on what is a sick bird and how to calm them. And also because it reveals the distinction between bird collectors and redraws the history by which bird watchers have separated from bird hunters by not killing the birds, but by only observing them. So a bird reserve is a place where birds are identified and counted. It is a place of production of knowledge on biodiversity stress and not only on risk management. So this knowledge is particularly built through maps, and this is the map where you see the Mai Po Reserve on the north and the Mong Kok Bird Market in the center. But you can see also the different places where birds are observed on the islands around the territory, particularly the Po Toi Island, which is in the south and where seabirds are observed and counted by a guy named Jeff Welch, who goes there every week and who has been working as a businessman, and he still goes there. He goes there in this after his retirement to count birds because he says he has a love for numbers, and he also takes pictures of these birds to prove that he has really seen them. When there is, for example, a rare species, and he wants to prove that it's there. So there are a lot of controversies on pictures because pictures can reveal aspects of knowledge, but they also can threaten the species if photographers go too close to the bird nest. This is the figures that he draws, and this is the controversy on bird pictures. And there is a distinction between the bird watchers who take pictures and those who do not, and the most professional bird watchers do not take pictures, but they say the amateur bird watchers love to take pictures because it's a challenge to observe birds when you are mobile. And in a very smart way, the Hong Kong Birdwatching Society has used pictures of birds as indicators of environmental degradation. And they have asked their members to send pictures of local birds to the government to protect a site from new construction projects. So pictures are both sources of global knowledge. It is possible to see the ring of a bird on a good picture. And they are also testimonies of local engagement. So the controversy around pictures among bird watchers can be compared to the discussions among virologists on phylogenetic trees. Should we publish them? How big should we make them? Both aim at displacing the uncertainty of real encounters with sick birds in a site where it produces knowledge. But the uncertainty bounces back in the use of the technologies that allow to make the threat visible. How to displace the moment of alert so that it allows for anticipation of threats that are not only defined by experts. And this is a problem for politics of sentinel devices. How to build devices that send early warning signals in such a way that the anticipation still leads to a mobilization. How can birdwatchers act as whistleblowers? How to make the border, both ontological between species and political between territories, as a site of production of knowledge for the public and not only for the government. So to conclude, the alliance between virologists and birdwatchers in Hong Kong is an interesting local case for the One Health strategies that globally anticipate epidemics at the interface between wild and domestic animals and humans, putting together big international... I really conclude. That's a signal I must stop. Putting together organizations like Wildlife Conservation Society, Food and Agriculture Organization, World Animal Health Organization, or WHO. As Vincent Adams, Michelle Murphy, and Adele Clark have argued, anticipation as a growing technique in the biomedical domain constitute communities of affect by linking bodies in the preparation of an uncertain future. Using devices to make commensurable bodies of birds, both wild and domestic, with human in a virtual space, making souls comparable, to take Ayo Welbeck's proposition, which I suggest is something that hunters have always done. Virologists and birdwatchers not only act as advisors to government, but are also creating new relations between humans and animals. This case can be compared to what Paul Rabineau has called biosociality, involving patient groups and amateurs in the definition of public health. But it leads to reopen the bio to non-humans in a way close to what Stefan Emrach has called Gaia sociality, that is the coevolution between humans, animals, and microbes. Thank you for your attention.